So we will have no idea who the president is, and there will be armed conflict in the streets with white nationalists going to main voting areas in order to attempt to intimidate people or prevent people from counting ballots. That is what's going to happen on election night. How long it lasts, I have no idea.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Backstory. I'm the creator and host of this podcast, Dana Lewis. November Storm Clouds is a discussion about American democracy, affected by race relations, COVID-19, the treatment of war veterans and war dead by President Donald Trump, who said he wouldn't visit an American cemetery in France because the Marines buried there were losers. No doubt he said it, and meant it. Many think his character is atrocious. As a foreign correspondent, I've covered political leaders in dozens of different countries. Trump breaks the American mold. And the polls show U.S. voters are turning their backs on him. Joe Biden leads Donald Trump by 12 percentage points nationally among likely U.S. voters, according to a Reuters September poll. And Trump knows he's in trouble.
I got to tell you, I was sailing to an easy election. This was going to be so easy, I probably would have not been here tonight. I would have said, no, we don't have to bother.
This is the most bitter, ferocious, nasty American election campaign ever. The attack ads? Well, wow.
This is dangerous. And as long as Donald Trump is president, he'll keep encouraging the kooks, the crazies, the extremists, the angry fringe. It doesn't have to be this way. Reject the hate. Reject the violence. America or Donald Trump? Stand up for America.
Okay, here's where it gets chilling. In this upcoming interview, we ask, will Trump, if he loses, leave? And you know what? A lot of people think he won't. And the November election could be a disaster for America. November storm clouds on this backstory. All right, Dr. Jason Johnson is a professor of political science. He's a well-known commentator in America. And he has been racing around all day, and he's fit us in just for a few minutes. And I appreciate it, Jason. You just came from a COVID-19 test.
Yeah. It was a very interesting experience and sort of public health and government administration. It was at a local, you know, pharmacy that we have here in the States called Walgreens. And you had to set up an appointment. You go in, you kind of administer on your own. But it's sort of...
I won't ask you the details because it's personal, but what a runaway train in America. And we all look at it from Europe. Like, I mean, Britain, where I am, has had one of the worst outbreaks next to Brazil, next to America. We had 57,000 deaths around that. I mean, you guys are approaching 200,000.
Well, yeah. I mean, and the reason why is because Bolsonaro and Boris Johnson and Donald Trump are cut from the same cloth. Boris Johnson almost died from COVID-19 and still hasn't recognized the importance of sort of general public health. His attacks on NHS since he got into office have contributed to one of the difficulties that you all are having in managing it. But the United States is an absolute mess. It's an abattoir of death. We're going to have over 200,000 people dead from COVID, not to mention the people who are living with the long-term health consequences by the time Donald Trump has his first debate with Joe Biden. So it has been an absolute mess. We are the world's dirty cousin at this point.
What becomes the main election issue if there, I mean, he's hammering out law and order, law and order, law and order. Surely COVID-19 and the number of deaths and the healthcare crisis you have there must rank up against that and probably is above that.
Dan, I think what's important for everybody abroad to understand is that there is a disconnect, an extreme disconnect between what you may see in 24-hour news coverage and what is actually affecting regular people and voters. Now, everyone can always say that. It's always pretentious to say they're missing the man on the street. They're missing the guy in the pub. But I'm telling you this because it is true. The most important story is not the polls. The polls are consistent. Donald Trump is losing. Donald Trump has been losing. It doesn't really matter. He's acting like someone who's already lost. The biggest issue has been that he's cheating, that the president of the United States and the Republican Party have already said that national security agencies can no longer brief Congress on election interference. He has put one of his cronies and appointees in charge of the post office. It's hundreds of thousands, millions of Americans are going to vote by the post office this year. Shutting down post offices and destroying sorting machines is basically a way of gumming up the works. That is the problem. Donald Trump has already lost. He knows he's going to lose to Joe Biden. All he's doing now is trying to consolidate power. Any discussion in America, I scream this on TV and in writing, any discussion in America that pretends that this is actually still an election between two competing sides is ignoring the obvious dangers that Donald Trump poses to basic democracy.
So what are the demographics then? In terms of Black America, I mean, mm-hmm. surely if they can vote, they will not vote for Donald Trump. If they can get to the polls, if they can navigate a pandemic, if they can deal with this mail-in ballot problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, look, demographically, if you look at the United States of America, the Republican Party for 15, 20 years now, it's only a white people's party. They only function because they have almost a lock on white voters. And if you look at it, there hasn't been a Republican who actually won the majority of votes in America since, in 2000. I think the last time a Republican actually won the majority of the vote, it was 2004 when Bush ran for re-election. Every other election since, they've lost. They have not gotten the majority of the vote. So they're not reflective of what people want. So demographically, while they may have the majority of the white vote, Democrats usually get anywhere between 38 to 42% of the white vote, 90-something percent of the African-American vote. Trump has been oddly competitive with the Hispanic vote in America, but you have to remember the Hispanics are, it's a hodgepodge term. I mean, there are white Hispanics in America who identify with white supremacy and racism and abuse that the president sort of engages in. So, you know, it is a last desperate attempt for a certain kind of entrenched bigotry in America to maintain power, because demographically, they lost this country 20 years ago.
We were rocked by this Atlantic article. At least, I mean, I was rocked because I've spent a lot of time with the U.S. military embedded with them. I understand how they would react to it, where, you know, where he talked about worrying about his hair and not going to a cemetery in France and calling war vets losers. And it's just not the Atlantic, but it's been, you know, five other news organizations right. have come out now and quoted the same source. And I think we can all guess probably who the sources are, who the source is. But does that stick to him, or in this frenetic, ferocious news cycle, is that just forgotten about the next day?
No, it doesn't stick. And here's why.
It doesn't.
The cleavage in America, it's not between Republicans and Democrats. It's not even between conservatives and liberals. It's between people who pay attention to politics and people who don't. People who pay attention to politics already know how they feel, and they look for confirming information, and they don't want to deal with cognitive dissonance. So there's a lot of people in America who haven't even heard of the Atlantic story. They don't care. Now, the military has heard about it, and Trump is doing very poorly with the military for an incumbent president who happens to be a Republican. But you know what? He had already been doing poorly with the military. He was already at a low approval rate with the military. Most of the information that we're hearing about now is simply allowing people to be more comfortable in the decisions that they're already making. There's not one person in America who heard that Donald Trump called soldiers losers and didn't want to go visit a gravesite in France and change their mind from Biden to Trump. Nobody did, because everybody knew that this was Donald Trump's personality beforehand. He attacked John McCain. He called John McCain a loser for being a POW for 5 years in Vietnam. Who's going to be surprised by this?
So tell me about the race relations in America. Will they play a very big role in the election?
Oh, they always do, because this is a pretty racist country. And anyone who pays any attention knows it's a racist country, just like the UK, just like Brazil, just like any country that's dominated by people who colonized and killed the indigenous population. The only difference this time is that Donald Trump has done the one thing that you can't do in America and still get legitimately elected. Because, again, he may stay in power, but it's only going to be because he cheats like a third world country dictator. Donald Trump has angered white people in America. There's a lot of white voters in America. They don't care about racism. They don't care about corruption. They don't care about, you know, misogyny or anything else like that in the White House. But COVID-19 has wrecked our economy, and COVID-19 has disrupted the way of life that most people are used to. We can't go to the movies. Kids are trapped at home trying to learn online. The grocery store lines can sometimes be all the way around the corner, depending on what COVID precautions your schools have. So from a racial standpoint, Trump has alienated white voters in a way that most people have. African-Americans, or if you're talking about these sort of protests in general, let's be clear. state-sponsored violence against Black people in America is not new. We have merely been able to pay more attention to it over the last 15 years because of technology and because everybody is sheltered in place. Now everybody sees the violence. If you notice, the support for Black Lives Matter with white voters went from a peak of 63%. Now it's down to about 49 or 47. Some less than sophisticated American analysts would say, oh my gosh, the Black Lives Matter thing, it's working against people now. Biden needs it. No, 63% of Americans don't care that much about how Black people live. Let's be honest about the history of this country. It's about 50% think that Black Lives Matter is fine. The rest are fairly ambivalent about it. And there's not anybody in this country who sees protests in Portland and sees protests in Kenosha and suddenly changes their mind. How people are going to vote was already baked into the cake. And I'll close with this because I think this is really key. There's an activist in the United States is very active on Twitter. Her name is Bree Newsom. And Bree Newsom is the woman who climbed to the top of the flagpole in South Carolina and tore down the Confederate flag after a white nationalist, Dylann Roof, massacred 9 people in a church after praying with them, killed 9 Black people in a church 5 years ago.
Yeah, horrible.
And she has this great tweet where she says, you know, as a white person, these responses to Black Lives Matter are kind of like some white person saying, you know what? I was against slavery, and then I heard some slaves burn down a cotton field. Look, either you were against slavery or you weren't. Okay. If burning down a cotton field or a slave revolt changes your mind, then you were never really against slavery. If protests in 2 American cities, when the vast majority of American cities have seen nothing like this, if that's enough to change your mind, you were never in favor of Black Lives Matter. You were always going to vote for Trump. So race relations in America are pretty much what they've always been. It's just now they're public and people are much more concentrated in what their pre-existing opinions already were.
I'm nodding my head, but I'm trying to process it because I would think after George Floyd and some of these terrible killings and video now that like, you know, sets the street on fire and can be seen from the East Coast to the West Coast so quickly that surely people now understand the level of brutality and they understand the police abuse and they understand how some 80,000 police departments, 85,000 police departments in America, you know, don't hire properly, don't train. And in the end, most of these guys walk on criminal charges. And surely the level of awareness and the amount of people who are disturbed, not just in the Black community, obviously, but in the white community, surely that's changed.
Yeah. I mean, look, here's the thing, Dana. People always knew. It's like when you have a steroid scandal. Right. In a popular sport, whether it's Lance Armstrong or tennis or football or basketball, and it's a steroid scandal. And people are like, oh, my gosh, you know, and then there's a big discussion for weeks. We need to talk about steroids in high school and college sports. Everybody already knew it was there. It's just occasionally it gets thrown in your face in a way that you can't avoid. Everyone in America, white people have always known that the police are more brutal and more violent with non-white people than with white people, regardless of the color of the police officer. Everybody's already known that. There's not one person in America who didn't know that. They may have not known how extreme it was. They may have not known data behind it, but they knew it. All that happened with George Floyd is that a bunch of people who were trapped at home, who were already frustrated, saw a murder. I mean, they saw a murder. And people don't like seeing murder because it forces them to confront the thing that they always knew was going on. But do I think it's transformed anyone? No. I think what it's done is made people who were ambivalent about the issue more clear that it's a problem. And it may have raised it from being here on those important things to here for some white people. But there's nobody who saw George Floyd as like, my God, I had no idea police brutality was an issue until I saw them kill this Black man in 8 minutes. Anyone who says that was the case with them, they're lying. I mean, you was a Stephen Lawrence. Stephen Lawrence was 2007, right? In the UK?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the riots that ensued after that.
Yeah. Like, is there anybody who didn't know how the cops treated people? I lived in Brixton. I've lived in Manor House. I know how the cops treat people, and I was an American. So, like, it's not like people don't know. It's a matter of how important they take the knowledge that they already have and how it applies to how they behave politically.
Is Biden going to get elected? And is the promise of a Biden victory going to change anything when it comes to race relations and policing?
I have no idea if Joe Biden is going to end up being president of the United States. That is the honest goodness answer. he will very likely win the popular vote. He may actually win the election, but whether or not he ever becomes president of the United States, I don't know, because we are dealing with an unprecedented administration that has made it abundantly clear that they will break every law, every norm, and every rule in the book in order to stay in office. What you're looking at right now is extremely important, and it's no different than it's not even just Brexit. It's when the Scottish sort of independence happened, which basically broke the Labour Party, right? Which is now going to allow the Tories and the Conservatives pretty much stay in power forever until something changes up there with the SNP, I think it is. What we're looking at right now is 60 days from the end of what's left of American democracy. If Donald Trump is not removed from office, we will not have another free and open election for 30 years because he's cheated. And everybody knows he's cheated. And if he gets away with cheating, and if he's able to stay in the White House, then we're not going to have any more elections here. They won't stop doing what they're doing. They'll get more bold. So will Joe Biden win? I think he'll win by any empirical measure. But whether or not he ever steps into the White House, I have no idea. There are too many factors at play. And I think anyone that says that they know is being naive and foolish.
Now, Jason, you're really making me feel foolish because here I went overseas as a foreign correspondent to places like Russia and to cover things like elections in Russia and Belarus, thinking that that would never come to America. And we were watching the spread of democracy after the fall of the Soviet Union. Now you're telling me I should have just crossed the Canadian border down to the U.S. and done my foreign correspondent service there. And I'll watch it there when Trump refuses to accept the results of an election. Astounding.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what I more or less predict, and I, you know, it's pretty much sort of my closing, but I'll tell you what I pretty much predict on this. We're not going to know on election night. We're not going to know who won the presidency on election night. What's going to happen is the president of the United States is going to declare himself the victor, no matter what the numbers are. He's going to say he's won. And then it's going to be up to the three main television networks as to whether or not they will broadcast the president claiming that he won. Then you're going to have states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, Minnesota, Arizona, maybe even Pennsylvania are going to be saying, hold on. We have so many mail-in ballots. We have to take more time to count. And as those counts come in, most of those states, if they were purple, are either going to get more blue or they may vacillate back and forth. Trump is going to tell people to stop voting. These neo-Nazi Proud Boy groups are going to start attacking electors. You're going to have the National Guard brought in. And all of that is going to be taking place in a situation where we know hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of ballots may never have even been delivered to the people who needed them to vote. And our Supreme Court said during a primary earlier this year that if your ballot doesn't arrive on election day, even if it's postmarked in time, they say that under some circumstances, you can throw it out. So we will have no idea who the president is, and there will be armed conflict in the streets with white nationalists going to main voting areas in order to attempt to intimidate people or prevent people from counting ballots. That is what's going to happen on election night. How long it lasts, I have no idea.
My head is spinning. Dr. Jason Johnson, thank you so much for your insight. And as disturbing as it may be, it's enlightening, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much. Anytime.
And even our next guest thinks in order for Biden to win, he needs a commanding victory. But Trump is on track to lose. All right, Michael Schur joins us from Los Angeles. He's a well-known political commentator. He's hosted election coverage. Very insightful. Always.
We'll try.
So now I want you to cut through the smoke and mirrors for me, because this article from The Atlantic, and I sense that this is not going to fade too quickly. I might be wrong, and I think you've talked about how fast the news cycle is right now, but I don't think it's going to fade very quickly, at least from some people's memories. So Trump wouldn't visit a cemetery in France. He was worried about his hair. He referred to 1,800 Marines at Belleau Wood as suckers for getting killed. He's denied it. Will it stick, Michael?
Well, here's the thing. I don't, and you're right. I often, Dana, think that things don't stick to this president and to this general news cycle. And in point of fact, they haven't. I mean, he's gotten away with more, with one or two of the things from the Access Hollywood tape, which would have sunk every presidential campaign in U.S. history, to an impeachment that didn't really show anything that was able to get him removed from office or to influence enough Republicans to vote for that. So I do think that we have to go in with that context. What this does do in an electoral way is have an enduring quality to it. Whether or not people are going to keep talking about it forever doesn't matter. But it is further facilitating of those Republicans who voted for Trump holding their nose, or those Democrats who went to Trump thinking that they just didn't like Hillary Clinton. It is further evidence as to why they should be comfortable not voting for the president in November. And that's the most important part of this. So you look at a lot of those Republicans who have a really hard time pushing D on their ballot, and they think of these things that Donald Trump has done about the military specifically, makes it a little easier for that vote to happen. And those are votes that Joe Biden and his campaign are courting very, very seriously.
So when you start carving up the demographics and we're looking at these polls, so he's lost seniors over COVID-19?
He's lost seniors over COVID-19. He's also lost seniors by not really, almost demonizing Social Security. If I was Joe Biden right now, I would be doing what Hillary Clinton didn't do, which was to talk to seniors directly about protecting Social Security. It's an issue that the Democrats have always done in campaigns, scared the other side into thinking it was going to be taken away. Hillary Clinton didn't do that when she ran. I thought it was a mistake. I expect that the Biden people will begin to do that, and they should do it pretty soon.
Right. He's lost the military over this article, which has been confirmed by a half dozen different major news outlets. How important is the military vote?
Military vote is very important. And a lot of people, it's not just the active military that you're thinking of, because they don't vote in the right biggest numbers. They're difficult to poll because they can't be open about what they are, what their leanings are. But the veteran vote is so important in the United States. And we have more and more veterans as we've gone into wars over the past 20 years that have created a bigger veteran pool. So when you do lose veterans, you're losing a big chunk. You're not just losing older veterans, you're losing younger veterans who are going to begin to count on the Veterans Administration, the hospitals, the medical care. It's a very important voting block. Anybody who casts any time there's doubt cast about the way a candidate feels about the military, it certainly is not good in terms of garnering that vote.
That's a good point. And he's lost working women.
Yeah, I mean, when you say he's lost, I think that there is still people talk about the silent Trump voter. I don't think that there are that many of them, but some of them are, and some of them are white, middle class, working, Midwestern working Americans. And when I say working Americans, working blue collar jobs, and by and large, he has lost some of those, but working women within suburbs and within cities who may have not liked Hillary Clinton. Again, I think, I keep harping on this, Dana, because it's very important. One dynamic in this presidential race is that people, by and large, like Joe Biden. They don't necessarily love him, but they certainly don't hate him. And I think that was something that Hillary Clinton brought to the race, was this sort of vitriolic dislike that many people in America, from Democrats to progressive Democrats to Republicans, certainly, who really did not like her for whatever reason. That dynamic doesn't exist now. So getting those voters, it's a lot easier for a Joe Biden to woo those voters to his side than it was for Hillary Clinton. And those are voters who went to Donald Trump. So coming back home to the Democratic Party, which some of them are going to do, it's going to be an easier task. And that he's proven so far in the polling that he's been able to do that.
I often ask questions that I know the answers to. One of those things in television news, right?
Yeah, of course.
But tell me, here's one I actually do not quite understand the answer to, and maybe you can enlighten me, and Europeans and Canadians and everybody else.
As long as it's not a math question, I'm good.
Well, it's a polling math question, but
okay, all right.
Who are these people who, no matter how offended they are, no matter how much they, don't agree with his morality, with his business dealings, his ethics, but they'll go and vote for the guy no matter what. I mean, he could be a mass murderer and they'd go and vote for him. I mean, what is
that? Well, many of them, and I, the mass murderer thing aside, but you're right. I mean, he's even said it.
That might have been a stretch.
Yeah, well, let's not stretch it because it might not be either, and I don't want to know if it isn't. I think what you're looking at is you're looking at a voter here who has other interests in mind. For example, an evangelical Christian voter. The only thing that lives on in perpetuity, Donald Trump will be dead and buried, but Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh may likely still be on the Supreme Court. And there are people that are social conservatives that care deeply about that. And they're the types of people that will sit, they will fight all the way. It's an interesting dynamic in American politics that the Democrats and the left don't get as well as the right. You can excoriate the candidate during the primaries. You can say, I will never vote for that candidate. But when it's that candidate up against the other candidate in the Democratic Party, these conservative Christians are always going to vote for the person they know are going to put on judges that will defend that will fight for the rights of the unborn, that will talk about prayer in school, that will protect the flag, all these sort of conservative moral issues. Those are people that are going to come out for Donald Trump. The other thing is you have the types of voters who don't vote a lot, people who are wooed by both his celebrity and the fact that he, is really kind of giving the middle finger to a lot of the establishment politics. Now, of course, he then slid right into it when he got to Washington, but that was his way of getting there. And there are a lot of people that just like to see that play out. And that's really what Donald Trump has tapped into. But I don't think that it's a permanent thing. I'm one of the people that think that the Trump era is an aberration, but it will have a hangover. You are going to have Trump Republicans, whether he wins or not, existing for a little while until they're cycled out. And then something new may happen, or I may be wrong, but I do think this is an aberration.
The poisoning of Alexei Navalny is taking you far away from America now. Trump astonishingly refuses to condemn Putin. He has shaken NATO allies. I mean, Germany, Britain. What gives? I mean, I have a few theories, but what gives?
Well, I mean, first of all, he doesn't want to anger Vladimir Putin right now. Michael Cohen, his sort of consigliere who served time, who was his assistant, who has now basically turned state's evidence against Donald Trump, has a book coming out today as we speak. I don't know when this is airing, but it's Tuesday in the United States, the 8th of September, and this book is being released as we speak. And in this book, he said that Michael Cohen said the president has an adherence to Vladimir Putin. He likes the way he runs Russia like a business. And these are quotes. And these sorts of things, these sort of
authoritarian... I don't think he runs it like a business. Otherwise, he wouldn't have sanctions on and he wouldn't be jailing and poisoning people. But okay.
No, I agree with you. I'm paraphrasing what Michael Cohen is saying. But there's an authoritarian way of running a business that Donald Trump seemed to like to do. And Cohen, for his part, and again, we're talking about somebody who served time in prison, but served time in prison covering for Donald Trump. I think that Cohen is saying that he runs it like a mob boss, and a mob boss doesn't care if the other guy gets whacked in this case. So if you see the head of another family, as Putin might be in Donald Trump's parlance, then you protect that person. There are also business interests that we don't know about. This all ties into when we get his tax returns, what we know about his loans and Deutsche Bank and those sorts of things.
Maybe a few videotapes you don't know about as well.
Hey, there could be that too.
I know you got to go. Biden or Trump? I mean, too early to call for you because the polls are like 7.5-8% for Biden?
Yeah, it's not too early to call for me. I think that Biden's going to win. I don't see a path that Trump has electorally here or with the popular vote. I see him fighting in places that the Republicans should not be fighting in this time, Dana. And even though Nate Silver and a lot of the good pollsters here in the United States are saying that he has better than a 1-in-4 chance of winning re-election, I think that you also have Joe Biden with just a 3-in-4 chance is pretty good. I do think that there are going to be places that you think the president's not going to do as well, where he's going to start doing well. Already you're seeing him writing off Michigan. He's got to make up for that, and he's got to make up for a couple of other states that it looks like he's going to lose. I just don't know where he goes for those electoral votes.
I think most of Europe will be relieved if you're right, and I have no doubt that Michael Schur probably is right. Michael, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And that's Backstory on the American election. Please subscribe to Backstory, and if you can, share it. We really appreciate you listening. I'm Dana Lewis, and I'll talk to you again soon.